following is an interview with Vera Giesing, held in Washington, D.C. on April 22, 2006. The interviewer is Sydney Bokoski. Can you tell me your name, please, and where you were born?
My name is Vera Anna Giesing. It used to be Vera Diamantova. I was born in Prague, Czechoslovakia.
In the city of Prague?
Well, in a hospital in Prague, because we actually lived on the fringes of the city in a little town called Čelakovice. But my mother had me in a proper hospital in Prague.
And what do you remember about life before the war?
I remember an awful lot because I had a very happy childhood. We had a very close family, my father and my older sister, who was 4.5 years my senior. Her name was Eva. They were very close. My sister was very serious and studious, and I was a little ragamuffin who always got into scrapes. But I was very close to mother, and we were an incredibly happy family. There wasn't a cloud on my horizon in my childhood as far as that.
How large was the family?
How large?
Just you and your sister?
Just me and my sister, and my father and mother. And a few pussycats, which were my family.
So, grandparents, aunts, uncles?
Oh, we had... My grandfather and grandmother lived in Prague, and we used to go and see them every Sunday. My grandmother was blind, more or less from the time she had her last child, last son. And I remember being told that mother, who was the oldest of the six children, looked after her and brought the youngsters up for her. And I'll never forget the time when my grandparents came to see us, which they did very frequently, came to stay for a few days. And I was only nine years old, and I was given this important task of leading my grandmother from our flat upstairs to my mother's office across the yard. And I felt very important, and I held on to her. Then suddenly she tripped, and she fell, and she fell on her face, and her face started bleeding. And I was just so horrified. It's an image which really stayed with me because I felt I didn't let just her down, but I let my parents down for giving me the responsibility. And our grandfather, he was a musician, he was a businessman, and he had a beard which tickled me no end whenever he kissed me. Whenever he did that, there were always giggles.
Was he religious?
No, none of the family were religious. You know, in Czechoslovakia, after the First World War, it became Czechoslovakia, we had a wonderful president, and there was this tremendous patriotism that spread like a wave throughout the country, and 90% of the population were so proud to be Czechs. They were so proud to have a place of their own that they weren't anymore part of the Austrian Empire. And it really, really was a happy country. And I grew up knowing I was Jewish, of course, and I was happy to be Jewish, but it didn't matter what you were or who you were. You know, in my class, for instance, there was only one person who was Jewish apart from me. And there was no rabbi, or nobody came to give us lessons. So rather than be bored, I went to the lessons, Christian lessons.
At school?
Yes, this was at school. We still went to the synagogue if we went to Prague to stay with the grandparents and on holidays and things like that. But religion didn't play a major role in our life until, of course, Hitler was on the scene.
You said your mother had an office. What did she do?
Well, my father had a distant distillery. He manufactured wines and spirits, and my mother ran the office side of it.
And you also said there were six children. So you had five aunts and uncles?
Six children?
I thought I heard you say that your grandparents had six.
Oh, my grandparents. Oh, yes. Yes, I had, two of them died of natural causes. But I had an aunt Berta, who was my mother's younger sister. She was a spinster, and she couldn't get over me being such a terrible ragamuffin and always getting into scrapes. And then there was a brother of my mother's who was still alive, and he had a lovely wife, Marta, and two young boys who were roughly the same ages as my sister and I, except that both of them were a year younger than my sister and I, Honza and Tommy. And we used to see them more or less every week, every time we came to Prague. And we were a very close family.
So this is from your mother's side?
Yes. My father also had two sisters, and they had a family, and they were much richer than my mother's relatives. But they were also very nice, and we often went on skiing together, you know, into the mountains.
And they also lived nearby?
They also lived in Prague.
How many people, up to first cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents, how many people do you think there were in your family?
I would think about 16 at least.
And how many survived the war?
Three.
Three. You and your sister and...
Well, I'm not counting my... because I was thinking survived,
others,
it
yeah.
means going through the Holocaust. We were lucky enough not to...
Well, now that you brought this up, when you came to England, or when you came to the United States, to England, to,
yes.
to live in England. Did you consider yourself a survivor? Did you identify yourself as a survivor?
I was 10 years old. I considered myself a little girl who was sent to England to learn English and to stay there till the problems blew over. And, you know, when I was told before I left, you'll be back within a year, you'll see.
Do you know,
survivors, nobody considered themselves survivors then,
okay.
not until 10 years later. No. I consider myself a child of, you know, it's a difficult question because there is this animosity from the real survivors of the Holocaust
to
us,
yes,
to the camps, yes. To us who were just sheltering in England, really, until the problems blew over. At least that was the that was what was supposed to.
Of course, you weren't supposed to be here.
Hmm?
You weren't supposed to be here, according to the Germans.
You mean I wasn't supposed to be alive?
Right.
Yes. There would have been no possibility of me surviving had I stayed behind if my parents did not have the moral courage, you know, to let us go. And I mean, it took an awful lot of courage and a tremendous love and tremendous strength to let us go.
Let's go back to when you're in school.
Yeah, sorry, so much.
What did you speak in your household? What was the language of your house?
Oh, Czech.
Czech.
Czech, yes. My parents spoke German sometimes if They didn't want me to understand. But I did learn German, you know, it was a sort of a second language to learn. I didn't know it all that well.
So did you read things in German as well?
No.
Just in Czech?
Not really.
Do you think your parents identified with German culture?
My mother had German schools. My father had Czech commercial school. I mean, they both spoke fluent German because while we were part of the Austrian Empire, and that is when they were young people in their teens, if you wanted to go to university or to a proper college, you know, you had to know the language.
Was your father in the First World War?
Yes, he was.
A soldier in the Habsburg Army?
Yes, that's right, he was.
Did that help with a license when he was after the war? A license to sell liquor and wine?
I don't know how that came about, quite honestly. I couldn't tell you, but I don't think he had any help from outside.
And you went to school on a regular basis, every day?
Oh, yes.
The Czech school?
Mm-hmm.
And participated in Christian religious education, went to the classes. Did you have non-Jewish friends? Did you have Gentile friends?
Well, in our town, there were only about three Jewish families, you see. My best friend was a Catholic. I adored my two cousins, the young boys, you know, who were my mother's brother's children, and they were, of course, Jewish. And I did go to synagogue with them, you know, if we were in Prague. And as I said to us, it didn't matter so much where we worshipped, you know. We were Czechs first, and Jews by race.
So this is Masaryk that you were talking about, and he was a hero.
Masaryk wasn't just a hero, he was a very learned man. He was incredibly fair to one and all, respected throughout the world. We were so proud of him. We used to call him Taki Czech Masaryk, which means Father Masaryk. And in every classroom throughout the land, there were big portraits of him, you know. And if it was his birthday, you know, it was magical life. We were such a unified community. If only the world could be like that today.
Was there any anti-Semitism that you remember?
Not at that time. I don't recall any. And my sister, who's 4 years my senior, so she was sort of 16 and a half by the time, you know, we went to England. Oh, no, she was just under 16 because it was up to 16 that Nikki could take. And I asked her because she would have known. And she said she never encountered it.
Hmm. Well, it was Masaryk.
It was Masaryk. And even after he died, his sort of pupil, Edward Benes, took over. And I mean, he wasn't Masaryk. You know, nobody could have equaled his popularity. But he was a good man.
And Benes.
Yes, he was a good man, and he was respected.
What kinds of memories sort of stand out up to 1938? You said you had no clouds on the horizon.
No. We had a horse, and the horse, and we had a cart with a horse, and sometimes barrels of the of wine or the beer or whatever, you know, was distributed by the horse. And on special occasions, I was allowed to ride on him to the river, but I wasn't allowed to go very far where it was deep, but so that he could have a real good brush down. And, you know, it's amazing. I still can sort of feel his coat tickling my thighs as it got wet. and feeding him every day with sugar lumps, really, which my parents didn't think was right for him. But my passion were cats, and every time I saw a cat, I decided it must be a stray, that it looked hungry, and I used to take it home and put it up in the loft, climb the ladder to the roof of one of our buildings, where there was a sort of there was space where we kept the hay for our horse, and I used to keep the stray cats there and feed them, and whenever anyone lost a cat, they came first to us. Yeah, I got my cat. And of course we had cats too, and you know, when it was time for me to leave, one of the things that I remember most was that my cat was expecting kids, and my father threatened to drown them because it kept happening, you see. I have to wait.
How many cats did you have altogether?
Well, we only had one cat. The others, as I said, didn't really belong to me. But just before I left for England, that cat got pregnant, and my father had threatened, you know, that he drowned the kittens. And this was, of course, after the Germans occupied us. And my best friend Marta, who was very loyal to me, she promised she wouldn't let my father drown the kittens. And I've got a lovely picture of her with the kittens in my book, you know, to prove to me that they were still alive. It's got rather sad and happy ending, because after the war, the first time I went to my hometown, back to my hometown, and of course my mother and father weren't there. None of the few Jewish people that were there had survived. And I went rather heavy-hearted, as you can imagine, to a sort of a pub restaurant next door where we used to go sometimes for Sunday lunch. And as I sat there, the owner, who used to be a young lad and now he was a man, came to me and put a cat in my lap. And he said, "This is the daughter of your cat. Do you want to keep it?" And you know, I cried and I cried and I cried, because I realized she was the only survivor of that happy time of my childhood spent there. And the other thing, which I think was most important of that time, the summer before the Germans invaded, I was 9 and a half, and Mother sent me to a holiday camp. She thought it might do me good to sort of be away on my own, without my sister, you know, and without them.
This is how your book opened. Hmm? This is how your book opened.
Yes. And I went to this camp by a lovely river in the most beautiful countryside, and there were great kids all around me, and we were tobogganing, we were canoeing and hiking and picking mushrooms and doing so many lovely things. And then suddenly I injured my big toe of my right foot, and it turned septic. And suddenly, instead of enjoying myself, it was all bandaged up, and I was confined to a wheelchair, and there was me sitting watching everyone else enjoying themselves. And I was so miserable, and I cried, and the camp leader came to me, and she said to me, "Why are you crying, little girl?" And I said, look at my foot. What should I do? Laugh." And she said, "What is your name?" And I said, "Vera. Diamond." Which in Czech, of course, was Vieruška Diamantová. And Well, she looked at me and she said, "Oh, you are a diamond. You must be crying real tears." And you know, it made me feel important and grown up. I mean, I knew I wasn't crying tears, but I thought it was rather lovely thing to say. And I thought, I'm not going to be a misery. And I'm not going to write to my mum and ask her to come and fetch me. I'm going to stick it out.
Even though you said you were homesick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was homesick because I couldn't do anything, you know. And when a kid is in pain, he or she wants his money, you know. Anyway, when my mother came to fetch me at the end of the month, she exclaimed in horror at the very sight of me. And she said, when I showed her my poor old toe, she said, "It must hurt ever so much. Didn't you cry?" And I said, "Of course I didn't. I only shed pearls." And this made her think, that little girl of mine isn't tied to my skirt anymore. She can be brave. She can be independent. And I know for certain that if it hadn't been for that experience, 8 months later, she wouldn't have let me come to England. And I wouldn't be sitting here today too. So it was a very, very important incident, and it gave the right title to my autobiography, because the pearls of childhood, or pearls of childhood, are into my childhood tears.
It's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
Was there any discussion, was your father politically aware of what was going on?
I think mother was more aware of what was going on than father, because my father was an incredible optimist. Because, I mean, there was an occasion on the day, 15th of March 1939, when the Germans invaded, and I thought of a large group of the soldiers came into our small town. I'll never forget them arriving, because I woke up and I saw my mother and father standing in the window and my sister next to them, and they had their arms around each other. And I crept to their side and couldn't believe my eyes, because line upon line of German soldiers were marching into our square, and there were an awful lot of the inhabitants of our small town lining the streets. And then suddenly, with one voice, they started singing the Czech national anthem. It started with the words, "Where is my home?" And I didn't realize then that our home was no longer ours, of course.
And it's Mavlast.
Mavlast. No, Mavlast, yes, because it starts with the word Vedomosnu, where is my home. But that is our national anthem.
Do you remember how you felt watching the Germans marching?
I felt shocked rather than afraid. I had no idea what was coming. In fact, I even had a sort of a sneaking pleasure from being told that the troops would temporarily take over my school and I'll have an unexpected holiday. But you know, at the age of 10 and a half, you're not there. There was no television, nothing like that to tell me, and our parents tried to protect us. Yeah, and my father kept, he was an optimist, you know, he thought, what would the Germans want with Czech Jews?
Well, when they took the Sudetenland, do you remember if people were upset about that first?
My parents had friends in the Tibetan land, and they were obviously very, very shocked. I, as a little girl, also tasted what it meant to some other people, because during the night that the Germans were marching into the Tibetan land, many people, I mean, whether they were Jewish or Christian, whether they were political refugees, writers, or, well, enemies of the Third Reich in any way, they fled into the outskirts of Prague for shelter. And one family stopped in our town, and I found the next morning a girl in our class who wasn't there before. And I noticed, though she was dressed, she had no shoes on her feet. And, you know, I asked her, I was concerned how it came, and she said, when my father just gathered me in his arms, there was no time to take anything. And I noticed her feet were the same size as mine. My home was just across the road from the school. So at playtime, I ran over and I just took a pair of shoes out of my wardrobe and gave it to her. She was so pleased. When I got back home in the afternoon, I thought my mother would be very cross with me. And instead of that, she hugged me and there were tears in her eyes and she said, "Bring Anna back home tomorrow after school and let's see what else we can find for her." So that was a little taste. You know that the world isn't such a safe place after all. And the other one was, of course, when the Germans marched in, and the commandant of the troops of our town took over the best room in our house for his office. It was a room which had a separate entrance, and Father used it for business, entertaining, and he used it for special occasions, you know, special family celebrations and get-togethers. And the commandant summoned our whole family before him. And I remember standing there, looking at him, and he was sitting like you are by the table, and he had these highly polished boots, leather boots, listening. And Mother was a very good seamstress, and she had made a couple of lovely rags. And there were his heels digging into Mother's rug, you know, and I found the whole scene terribly offensive. I hated it, hated him, and fine. And he said to my father, "I hear that you and your family can't speak German." And Father said, "That's true." And the commandant went on, "From now on, that would be my day. Come in.
Good morning. How are you?
Where are
you?
Are
you
Sure. Oh, very nice. Thank you. You've been spoiled. I'll be up another night because I asked the topic. Well, this isn't our room. This time it's all right with me. Is it raining?
It's not. No,
okay.
Rain.
Good. I didn't know it rained.
Yes, let us. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Yes, anyway, he just met this commandant. Said to my father, "As your family can speak German, I want only German spoken in this house." And Father looked the commandant straight in the eye and he said, "I am the head of this household, and as long as I live, we shall speak Czech and German only in your presence." A that the commandant stood up and he spat in my father's face. And you know, I can see it as if it was yesterday. I can see the saliva running down his cheek. And I vowed I'd never again speak his word of sermon. And
yeah.
I could not. I think when something like that happens to you as a child, it's imprinted in your memory, and you sort of feel almost obliged, you know, to keep it.
Were Zionists in your town?
No. No, there was a Jewish doctor and a Jewish veterinary surgeon, right? Both great admirers of my mother, who was really and truly beautiful, but very, very much in love with father, so they didn't stand a chance. I don't remember anybody, you know, who was sort of deeply religious.
But even the political aspect of Zionism, nobody ever talked about going to Palestine.
No, not as far as I know.
Not in your
house. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, quite possibly behind closed doors when there was a whole group of them, such subjects may have been discussed. But before Hitler, before there was the danger of Hitler, everyone was much too happy to be in Czechoslovakia than to want to go to Palestine. You know, afterwards, obviously, I'm sure things have changed. But you must remember that our parents tried to shield us from fear.
So had you heard the name Hitler or Nazi?
Oh, of course, yes. We knew all about Hitler. And we knew that there was a threat of Hitler. But they hoped, of course, that the invasion wouldn't happen. It wasn't until after Chamberlain brought his promise to Czechoslovakia that the situation changed drastically, and the fear then was absolutely well, I mean, there was a lot of fear then. Though some people I know, when my mother found out that there was an Englishman who had been in Prague in November, December of 1938, and that he was trying to get out as many of the refugees who had fled to Prague from the Sudetenland, child refugees, and also Jewish children from, who were residents in Czechoslovakia. That was the sort of my first knowledge that something unpleasant might be happening. But right next door, there was a Jewish family. They had two boys, more or less the same age as myself and my sister. And the wife called mother a wicked stepmother for even considering to send their head children away. I mean, lots of people, nobody knew what Hitler had in store for us. Nobody knew that. So lots of people were short-sighted.
It would be over in a year.
That's right. Well, listen, I think any parent faced with such a situation, who has the strength and courage to send their beloved child to a country they themselves had never been to people they'd never even heard of, without knowing when or even if they would ever see them again. It was was an incredible undertaking. It required an awful lot of courage and a very special kind of love to be able to do that.
When did your mother start to talk about this possibility?
Well, I mentioned that we had two cousins in Prague, and it was their mother and father who had heard about Nicky Winton. Though they didn't know the name, but they knew that there was now an organization which had been set up by this Englishman who was finding homes in Ottawa. The people to stand safe as many as possible. And she told my mother about it. So that's how my mother knew. And then she decided, after the episode with this German commandant in our house, father dismissed it, then we just were unlucky to have such a bastard in our house. They only stayed about a month, you know, and then they went further, just leaving a small number of German soldiers to keep order in our town. So my father dismissed it, as I said, but mother didn't. Mother feared for our lives. She wasn't such an optimist. And so she went to Prague. We stayed with my grandparents, and without telling father, she queued up day after day, night after night, for about 4 days, till she was able to put our name down, and our details, and our photographs, and, you know, on the cover of my book, there's a photograph of me as a very sort of chainty-looking little girl, which captured the eyes of the family I came to. They didn't realize they were getting a real dad and mom. So, and she didn't say anything to father or to us. And then one day, we were having supper, and we were sitting around the table, and mother was eating tea, and then she suddenly just put her knife and fork down and looked at father, and she said, "I heard today that Eva and Vera can go to." I'll never forget the look of father's face, covered it in his hands. There was a deathly silence, and he looked up at us, and there were tears in his eyes. He said, "Very well, we have to let them go." Amazing how these things are still so much in my head and my heart. You know, that as if it was yesterday. And of course, they saved our lives. And you know, much later on, when I found out that my parents did not survive, and my aunt, my mother's sister, she buried my mother in Belsen 2 days after the end of the war. And those two young cousins from Prague, they went from camp to camp, and as skeletons, they ended in Belsen. And auntie and my mother, before she caught typhus, saw them because they were standing by the fence or whatever which divided the barbed wire which divided the male camp from the female, and they were shouting Kestner, 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 which was my mother's maiden name and my auntie's name, because she hadn't married. They didn't recognize the boys. They were just skeletons. And my auntie Bertha, she buried all three in Belsen, all after the end of the war, and the youngest on his 16th birthday. They were supposed to come. Homes had been found for them, and they were due to come on that last transport, that fated transport, which was due to leave on 1st of September, the day Hitler invaded Poland and all borders were closed. When I was writing the book on Nicky Winton, I did my best to research how many of those 250 children had survived.
How many did you find?
Two. And those children were taken before before the rest of them went to the camps, to Palestine, because their parents found enough money to give to the Germans to get their permission for them to leave. So, all in all, none of them survived, because the others, you know, weren't involved.
This was the seventh transport.
The ninth. There were nine transports. There should have been nine. And I thought of it's very, very difficult to comprehend. All these things didn't come out until I met Nicky Winton again, because I never knew who saved our lives until 1988. But neither did anybody else. Like my foster family. Perhaps I should go now to the foster family.
Sure.
Before I left home, my mother and father, they kept reassuring us, you'll be back within a year, you'll see. And my mother, she had clothes made for both my sister and I, lovely clothes so that we would come to England in style. And they were all made to fit, because she couldn't bear the thought of us not coming back soon. Just before we were leaving, on that last night, my father gave me a leather-bound diary, and it was full of empty pages. And he said to me, use it as a diary. And I said, but there are no dates in it. And he said, well, there'll be times when you have nothing to write about, and other times when there'll be a lot you want to share with us. Maybe you'll be homesick, or maybe you've been naughty, or something wonderful's happened. When you've got something to say you'd like us to hear, put it down in the diary, so that when you come back to us, we can all sit around the table, read the diary together. And Mother, on that last night, she put her arms around me and looked to an open window. And the night sky was full of stars. And she said, let the stars of the night and the sun of the day be the messengers of our love and our thoughts. And in that way, we'll always remain. I can't tell you what thoughts it is they were. Because once war started and all correspondence, I was able to talk to them through the sun and the stars. I wrote and wrote in my diary. I covered 14 or 15 exercise books. Throughout the war, they were the thoughts, my hopes, my fears.
Did Eva write too?
And Eva did the same, yes. And, you know, we went together. She was on the other side of England. We saw each other on holidays. She was in a posh school. I was with a very poor family, but with a very big heart. A Christian family. But again, they made me feel at home. They accepted that I was Jewish. They didn't force me to go to church, but they said it would be nice if I went. And I thought, well, there's only one God. Wherever I am, I will pray for my family, my parents, as I did every night. And and really, it was my parents who gave me this wonderful gift of all the records of those years, which were now on paper. And the diaries, they were meant for them, for them alone. And I felt, after I found out that Father was shot on a death march in December 1944, you know, that my mother had perished of typhus and all the rest of it, and about the rest of the family, I put all the diaries in a box, and I felt I could never bear to open them again, because they were meant for my parents, and my parents alone. And it wasn't until after I came back to England, because I went back to Prague at the end of the war, and I was there for 3.5 years, and I studied at Prague University, I studied English and Literature, but then I was offered a job to be a head of a translating pool at the Ministry of Defence, and it seemed too good to miss, so I thought, okay, I'll take it and I'll do my studying sort of, in my spare time, you know, I didn't think I'd have any problem. But
this is still in Prague?
Yes, it was still in Prague, but 6 months after that, there was the communist coup. And of course, I was pro-British, anti-communist, Jewish, and of bourgeois origin, you know, all the things that the communists hated, and I found myself being interrogated because I could never keep my mouth shut, and I nearly ended up in the salt mines